Hannah in 1 Samuel 1:18. Do you know the word sad isn't apparently found very often in our English translations? But it says Hannah was sad of countenance, and we know that she was persecuted by a rival because she had no children. And so Hannah went to worship, and she was so distraught that she was crying and her lips were moving, but she wasn't vocalizing. So Eli, the priest, thought she was drunk. Here this woman has come into worship drunk. So he confronted her about it, and she changed his mindset. So she expressed that in her spirit there was great concern, and she was oppressed in spirit. That's what our version says, or the New King James, I mean the New American Standard. So he prayed for her, and her spirits were instantly lifted. She was done with all that other stuff, knowing that he had prayed for her and she was going to get what she wanted most, which was a child. And what did she do with the child? She gave him back to God. Now that was one grateful woman. And because she was so faithful, God saw to it that she had other children. And there are more and more, Matthew 6:16, Mark 10:22, the rich young ruler, it says he was greatly grieved in my version, but it's also sad because he left Jesus. But he made a choice. He made a choice of the physical over the spiritual. And that's why he was sad, but he just wouldn't let himself do what he knew to do. And Jesus was not happy with that, but he let him go because he knew he'd made his decision. Okay? So there are many, many more, and I would like to challenge each of you to find scriptures that would exemplify what we're talking about today, either for the good or not for the better. And it's an interesting study, I can tell you. And but what I'd like to do now is to move on to how you fix these things. Now I know the Lord has told us not to be anxious, and he gives us a lot of reasons throughout the scripture. But what I find is helpful, when I was in graduate school, which was 100 years ago, we were studying theories of psychology, which all it means is people's behavior. And excuse me. the one I was like, ho hum, there's Freud, there's him, this guy, there's that guy. And all right, maybe they got a little bit something to say, but then we studied the theory of cognitive therapy. What it's now called is cognitive behavioral therapy, or CBT. And so I want to explain to you how it works. So Marianne, if you could put up the cognitive behavioral therapy cube, that would be great. Okay, there's my little bit of information, and there's the cognitive behavioral therapy chart. what we do is we have to stop, and what we often do, the way we think it works usually, is that whatever happened causes my feelings. And if it makes me mad or it makes me sad, then I can't help it. That's just the way I feel. Have you heard that? Have you said that? Probably so. but that's not the way it works, actually. So if you look at your chart, excuse me, there has to be what I call an activating event. So there's the A, B, C. Okay, if you put A in the first one, B in the second one down, and C in the third one. Excuse me. I don't have coronavirus. I have a cough. So all the actuating event is you going back and realizing something has happened that affected your emotions. But you're still thinking it's just a feeling. There's nothing I can do about it. My executive assistant was trying to help my cough, so that's why I looked away. But what works better is when you're feeling lousy, whatever way you are, sad, anxious, whatever it is, go back and ask, what just happened? Or maybe the next thing is to think, what did I just think about what happened? Okay? There's the key to this cube right there. A lot of people don't go back and say, what triggered that thought? Okay? That is the thing to do, is instead of getting lost in your emotions and thinking you've got no choice in how you feel. I wish I'd known that when I was 15 or earlier. But you do have some choice. Now, there are actual things that are frightening, like this pandemic and the coronavirus and the what's not known about it. If you happen to be at high risk, which I'm afraid I am, but I'm not worried. I'm trying to be wise about the things, but I'm not worried. And so let's take an example, okay? We'll just use the coronavirus as an example. So what was your first thought after you heard about how deadly this virus could be and how many people were getting sick and dying? It is alarming, no question about it. But from that, you get to be shaky and anxious and you can't stop thinking about it. That's when it's a problem, okay? So go back and ask yourself, what did I think about it? And if you're working this chart the way I hope that you will teach yourself to, when it says assess up there, you write in what happened or what you think triggered the thought that led to the feeling, okay? Clear on this one. There's a new bad virus that's a superbug, and it is dangerous. They don't know what to do about it. There's nothing to do about it once you get it. And so, yes, it is alarming. What I think about it may be, oh, man, how will I stay healthy? Well, we were told a lot of things to think about it. But what you choose to think about it is what's important. So try to be honest with yourself and say, what am I thinking? What is my thought about this event? Okay? It is accurate if you think it's dangerous. That's accurate. If you think, and I will have to tell you that we were in Florida when this all first started, and somebody had very sweetly given us tickets to the Universal Studios tour. And I'm thinking, I don't know that that's such a good idea, but we went. And I started noticing whether people were staying far enough apart, thinking about what if I got it? What if? Now, that is the key to anxiety right there. There are some what ifs we need to think. What if I don't obey God? What if I just foolishly go in where there's somebody sick with coronavirus? So, but the things that we often think are overboard. And so I chose to think, okay, we're out in open air and, you know, there aren't that many people here. It's, after all, February, early March. But anyway, that was what first started triggering my thinking that I might actually be in danger. Go back and think what you thought. And I, for one, was glad that the behaviors of the governors and at some point our president, that there needed to be some guidelines. So that came out. That was very helpful. But the consequent emotion, if we're hung in uncontrolled anxiety, that is a problem. And it will hurt your health. It will hurt not just your mental health, but it will hurt your health. If we stay in a chronic state of anxiety or depression, the word depression is not in the Bible, but certainly people who got depressed, Elijah would be example number one, because he was depressed enough that he wanted to die. God said, it's not your time. I got more work for you to do. So you put what we're usually last to do is fill in the blank about what did I think about this event. Okay. That's what takes a lot of honesty. And when you're first starting to learn to do this, you may need to bounce what you're thinking off of an objective third party. Okay? So you want to write the revised thoughts or how you think about it in that what you first thought about it needs to go in the box right next to belief or about or what I think. Okay. And then you want to formulate a less destructive and a healthier thought and more accurate thought. Okay. Which would be something like, I've learned the guidelines for staying safe. It's true, I don't really want to go into quarantine, but I also not only have to think about my own health and well-being in order to be able to still do whatever I can do for the Lord and my family and my brothers and sisters in Christ, and I need to think about their well-being as well. So I don't want to expose somebody to something that I don't even know yet I have. So those are all accurate, needed thoughts. So you can revise your thinking in that square on the far right from what I think. Okay? You already got emotions down here. So you're afraid, you're anxious. Some of us may let ourselves look at the worst case scenario, which is, oh, I'm going to get it and I'm going to die. What is the likelihood of that? I was talking to this little boy one time in counseling that his mother had lived through a tornado. And she was absolutely terrified, even at the thought of one. So he told me the first time he came in, his mother was not in the room, that he couldn't sit on the love seat in front of the window. And I asked him why not. He said, because there might be a tornado. Well, the sun was shining brilliantly in Kentucky and no cloud in the sky, which I pointed out to him. And I said, so you don't think you can sit there now? And he goes, no, I can't, because it still could happen. And I'm like, it could. But to me, I think about what is the likelihood that that could happen. And I put my fingers very close together, and I said, what is the likelihood that there's going to be a tornado today? And he did stop and think about that. So weeks later, and his mother is the one that instilled it to the point that he couldn't go out to go to school. He was like 7 or 8 years old. And she came in with him one day and started to sit on the couch in front of the window and just couldn't bring herself to do it. And he looked exasperated and he said to her, Mom, how likely is it that there's going to be a tornado today? So he learned that and he did better. But after he got home and quit coming, guess what happened? She rubbed off on him too much again. So I saw him on more than one bout. But that's how it works. How likely is that? Is it possible? Yes. How likely is it? Is a good question to ask yourself. So hopefully after you make that revised thought, the consequent emotion or emotions is going to change to something that is tolerable. And then the more you practice what you know to do, then it should become quite manageable. There are some things that are very, very sad and very anxiety provoking. Losing a close loved one. Did you ever get over that? No. But you get through it if you know how to do that. There are lots of things that are available that can help you. And so the thing that is, I'm not quite seeing there on the bottom is the bottom one, which does not fit the ABC thing, but is behavior follows each of the, you know, when you've done all those other things, behavior is what you do or don't do. So that's how it works. It doesn't work like, oh, I got this awful feeling and I ran away. Or I'm so sad I can't get up out of bed. Now, that happens. That can happen. They can get like Elijah. But there are ways to work with that and prevent that. And so I'm going to talk a little bit more about deep depression in a few minutes. But so is it anybody, if you have any questions about that one, I don't think we're going to stop right now, but write them down or put it on the question format. And we'll get to that later. You may have some questions. So, but what I'd like to do next is talk about a couple of major emotions or emotions that can be, highly motivating to people. Okay. I'm sorry. I forgot we were going to go to this one. And I'll let you read that, but what we ask ourselves about the thought, is it rational or is it factual or irrational based on the fear? Is it accurate or is it inaccurate? Is it healthy or is it unhealthy? Is it constructive, that thought, or is it destructive? So what you're aiming for is to get the thought all on the left side of this page. Rational, accurate, reasonable is another way to talk about rational. Healthy or constructive, or is it all this other stuff? If you're all the way on that other side, you may need intervention. And there is counseling to be had, even in this situation. A lot of counselors are doing online, Skype, or some kind of counseling that is not face-to-face. I happen to think face-to-face is better, but you can't always do that. So I'm very happy for the technology that has allowed things like that and things like what we're doing today. Okay. The couple of emotions that, is that all of that, Marianne? Is there more? Oh, I think we're ready for let's pull that down for just a second. I want to talk about something else first, okay? Thank you. So two of the emotions that motivate a lot of people are fear, which we've already talked about, and anger, okay? Is all anger bad? No, it isn't. Jesus got angry. God got angry. And appropriately so. But what they didn't do is pick up a gun and shoot somebody they were mad at on a personal level. Okay? God's anger was righteous. Righteous anger. As was Jesus. Jesus, I think it's very interesting that Jesus never, never reacted angrily to anything that was directed at him personally, as Jesus the person. You thought about that? That's quite an amazing feat, but he was the only person, I'm pretty sure, who never did. He did, on the other hand, get very angry and got rid of some things that needed to be gotten rid of, but only because it was an insult and anger because they had dishonored his father, God. So that's also an interesting thing. But Jesus never sinned. So his anger about that was righteous. It was not destructive in the sense of harming his spirit or his soul or his life. Another one is pain and pleasure also motivate. What is the world generally motivated a lot by? Either anger or pleasure. So, but unfortunately, the way a lot of people deal with anger is very destructive. Even words can be very destructive. Somebody told me before when we started this that she thought she could control my mouth. And I said, well, sometimes somebody needs to control it. I need to control it. But that's one of the things we can learn to do. I can't just say I will never get angry. That's not going to happen. But when I get angry, I can manage it so that my behavior is not destructive to the person I'm upset with or to God, or to my relationship with God. So God never required us to do anything that we can't learn to do and you can't keep trying to do. So that's why I'm doing this. There are the most common mental health problems in America are mood disorders like major depression. Bipolar disorder is a mood disorder. And there are many others because it's all broken down into severity issues. Major depression can be a clinical depression, which means may require hospitalization. As can any of these others if they get to an extreme level. Anxiety disorders like generalized anxiety disorder, phobias, obsessive compulsive disorder, post-traumatic stress disorder, and panic attacks. Okay? Now nobody's saying that if you have any of these, you're not a good Christian. I am not saying that. It's not true. Was Elijah a man of God? Yes, he was. And God even intervened on his behalf directly and let him get what he needed, which was good diet, rest, and something to drink. We know what happens when we get dehydrated, right? And one of the things you may have heard on the news is about the increasing suicidality. It is the 10th leading cause of death in the United States, the 3rd leading cause of death among adolescents, and increasingly and rapidly growing in the elderly population. And right now, you've got a very real thing to be frightened of. So when people are thrown back into their households all the time, a person's usual work outside the homework is gone. There are a lot of you and people you know who do homeschool their children, but that's not every day, all day long with no breaks. And this can be a very distressing situation if you don't know things to do about it. That's why we're doing this. And substance abuse. Dependency is something that people are in. If they're in that stage, either alcohol or illicit drugs or even some over-the-counter drugs. Some of them are. But prescribed drugs, opioids, for instance. I know that I have an addictive chemistry, and I am very, very, very careful about using anything like that. And I have had to, in certain extreme cases, for a very short period of time. But too many people don't know they've got an addictive gene. Maybe they should know it, but they don't. And get in deep trouble. And that includes Christians. Everything that I'm talking about today happens among Christians as well as the world. And hopefully we have hope and we remember that before we do something we can't take back. But I will say about that, if these types of mental illnesses have gotten bad enough that somebody is in danger of harming himself or others or herself, then something needs to be done. It's a loving thing to do to say, we got to get you some outside help. Please don't tell them you're just not good enough Christian. I actually know someone who did that, somebody who was very well-meaning and made some very, very unfortunate situations or helped it come about. But please don't do that. How do you think Elijah would have reacted if God had chided him at that point? He did have to do a little more, a little sterner work when he said, no, your job's not over. Get back to it. Okay. So when you love somebody, you're not going to sit back and let them destroy themselves in whichever way, with substances or alcohol or self-harm in other ways. There is help. And even if that help does not belong to the church, they can still help you. And if you want, I can tell you things to ask about when you're looking around. You got to be a good consumer. Okay. So, I would like to go, Marianne, to the 15 styles of distorted thinking chart. Now, this wonderful guy, well, there's several wonderful guys who came up with the cognitive behavioral therapy. But these are ones that are identified as distorted thinking. It doesn't mean you're crazy. It means there's probably not one of us that hadn't done all of these at some point in our lives. But if you get stuck on one or two or a cluster of these, then you're not going to be very mentally healthy. And to be the best servant we can be for the Lord, we need to do everything we can do to help our physical health and our mental health. I will tell you that the hallmark of depressive thinking is number one, filtering. You take the negative details out and magnify them and just sit and stare at them. Or that's all you think about. and filter out all the positive aspects of any situation. You know people who do that? Have you ever done it? I have. It's not fun. And it is destructive. Now, some things are bad. There are some negative things. But if you just hyper vigilant with those, not seeing any positives. Okay. I just gave you a few of the positive things that I could think of about what this pandemic has done. I am so much more grateful for things. I was grateful anyway, but I'm more grateful for the things that we can't do, like going out to eat or some of those things that I took a little too seriously. I think that I want to point out that the next one is pretty well indicative of a lower level of thinking, like children, everything's black or white, good or bad. But here's the kicker. You have to be perfect or you're a failure. There is no middle ground with people who think in black and white terms. There's no color. There is no shades of anything. And that's just not real. That's just not realistic. And it's certainly not healthy. And I myself am a recovering perfectionist. And I will clue you in that it is absolutely true that there is not one perfect human being on the face of the earth or ever been on the face of the earth except Jesus Christ. So we're not going to attain that, no matter how much we think we've got to be perfect. We have to do the best we can. We have to try to learn more ways that we can get better. But we're not going to be perfect. So you probably don't beat other people up. Well, some people do, but most people don't beat other people up the way they beat themselves up if they're a perfectionist. So there is hope. You can get better with it. If you look down, all of these are important. I hope you will go back and read them all and ask yourself honestly, do I ever do that? And maybe to make sure that it's true, ask somebody who knows you well if you've ever done that. You know, fallacy of fairness. The world's supposed to be fair. I read so-and-so's mind today. You don't say that. But, oh, I know by the way she looked at me that she's mad. I must have done something. That's just not realistic, and it's destructive. Emotional reasoning is when you believe what you feel must be true. That's just the way I feel, and I can't change it. And that's not true. We can change it. It's hard. We have to keep at it. I don't think that I'll ever get old enough that I will stop all of my unfortunate thinking, but I can tell you for a fact, it's much better than it was before I started this. Blaming people, does that help you out any? It sure doesn't help them out, and it doesn't help you out either. Life must be fair, fallacy of fairness. Now here's one that I think as Christians, we need to have some shoulds, but this is an ironclad rules that you make about how other people should act, and maybe you too. If you feel naive and boring, you must be naive and boring. So if somebody thinks that, how are they going to feel? They're going to feel lousy. And if you're boring, try to do something about that. Find something interesting. Fallacy of change. You think other people will change to suit you if you just pressure or cajole them enough. You need them to change since your hopes and happiness seem entirely dependent on them, not yourself. There's a great old book called Happiness is a Choice. And it's got so many good points in it. Old as it is, you probably found it on Amazon. Global reasoning, you take one thing, one quality or lack thereof, and turn it into a global negative. Now, right now, we've got something global going on, This is the first time in any of our lifetimes. So that, does it happen often? No, it doesn't. And then heaven's reward fallacy. Sounds like that's aimed toward Christians, right? Well, no, it's aimed at everybody, actually. You expect that all your sacrifice and self-denial is going to pay off, as if somebody, you probably, is keeping score, feeling bitter when the reward doesn't come. Who's not done that? Okay. Read the rest of them. But the primary one that causes depression is filtering all the good out, focusing on the bad. The one that's the primary one for anxiety is the what if thinking. Yeah, but what if? What if so and so were to happen? That's what the Lord is meaning when he says, don't worry about tomorrow. The tomorrow that happened right after, or even not just tomorrow, but months away, like a vacation, did that happen the way you thought it would? No, not a thing we can do about it. But make the best of it. And then the other thing that often helps us understand our own cognitive and behavioral self is everybody has at least three views that are basic. One is their view of themselves, their view of self. What I am as a person, what I am like. Some say I'm worthless. Some say I'm as great as God. And they do say that out loud sometime now. And some say I'm a human being with human faults and weaknesses that I'm trying every day to get better with. Remember that the Lord was gracious and compassionate and helpful with Elijah? That's our job, with ourselves and with others. Not to be too nonchalant about it, but we need to find out what's the next thing we need to do. View of other people. Others are, some people might immediately add jerks, but other people are, some may say, safe. Well, neither one of those words is the exact answer, correct? So, you know, I would say in my world, in my view of other people is many, if not most people are kind and caring. And then I would say some people are evil. Some people are harmful. In the view of the world, what kind of place is it, do you think? Oh, the world is horrible. It's awful. Who could believe it's ever gotten this bad? I said that just recently. That's true. But the world you surround yourself with, the one I surround myself with, is for the most part safe and healthy and wholesome and supportive. We do have some choice about those things, don't we? We also have our choice about whether we're stuck on the place where we are right now with these descriptions. If we think about them and we see a need to change it. I'm already taking up more time than I meant to with all of that. All of these other things are things that you can do on your own. We can go back now, Marianne. We can go back to, and read on things we can do. I will talk about some of them and then we'll open it up for comments and questions. how to implement or some things that need to be implemented to make changes with. These are practical, effective ways. I know that most of you, certainly one of the things I've found in all this is how incredibly important and helpful it is both for me and for the person that I'm contacting, is communication. We need not to be totally isolated from everybody else. You know, people in prison, they put in solitary for long periods of time, become mentally ill. There's no question about that. So we don't want to isolate ourselves too much. And some people feel like right now I'm too isolated. And it's not my preference, but it's a preference to be around people more. But I don't want to get coronavirus, and I don't want to put myself in a position to give it to someone else. So we have to think wisely. So communication, reaching out to others, especially those that we see as vulnerable in whatever way they're vulnerable. Shut-ins, people who can't get out ever because they're too ill. Another thing that's helped, clearly, to pray is very important. Remember that we're praying to God, not Santa Claus. So sometimes I think people get those two things mixed up. Then when it doesn't happen the way they want it, they're like, where was God when this happened? I've heard people say he's in the same place he was when his own son died. So did God cause death? No, he didn't. He did not. He tried to make it so we wouldn't have to die. We have our part in that, and evil has the other part. But praying and contacting others, keeping communication going, especially with our family, with our brothers and sisters in Christ, and those who we know need communication and may need help. We've been very blessed with lots of those in our lives. You know, last year I had to decide I really was getting old. I was. So that can no longer be denied. There's nothing much you can do to stop that that's wise and healthy. So then you give God the glory that you've lived this long. So that's the other thing. And just very practically, keep a schedule. Not necessarily the same schedule you had when everybody was in school and somebody went off to work or both people went off to work, but it's very different. But there still needs to be a regular schedule. Maybe you get up an hour later than you did when you had to work or go to work. Start school an hour later if you're homeschooling. But it needs to be a set schedule because that is what we need as human beings. Try to eat meals at the same time of day. That doesn't work in our household with two, but that's my preference. And it's healthy. That's when a lot of families actually spend some time together, which has gotten less and less. Read and study the Bible daily. You've got to feed your knowledge. You've got to grow maturity and wisdom. And so that needs to be done, and I won't sit here and tell you that I do that perfectly every day. I don't. But I will tell you one thing. I think about how things relate to what I do know that's scriptural and godly and helpful. We need to do that. We need to teach ourselves to do that. You remember in parenting, the scriptures that talk about you teach them in the morning. You teach them when you're out somewhere. You teach them, you teach them, you teach them. And it's not just what you say to them, but it is what you say to them. It's also how you behave, how we behave. So we do those things. And with children, I actually challenged part of my family a couple of weeks ago to come up with as many things as they could possibly think that were blessings. So everybody can do that. And the more you think about it, guess what happens? The more you're aware of more and more blessings. And if we are always aware, and I used to wonder how in the scripture it says, rejoice in suffering. And I'm like, what? That doesn't quite compute. What he means is, if we're suffering for the Lord, We suffer because we've been given the privilege to serve the Lord. Are we just deliriously happy that we're being hunted or persecuted in that way? No, we're not. Not at the moment, no. But often, when we look back over times of suffering, what can we see? What I gained from that experience? How am I a better person? Am I more compassionate? Am I more able to notice when other people are suffering and offer help? All of those things. But I challenge them, you know, especially with children at home, offer them incentives for doing some of the things we're trying to work on. And it can be a small incentive, like a Hershey's Kiss. It can be something like, well, tomorrow we will go do this as a family, practicing social distancing at this point. But you get my point. It doesn't all have to be negative. Can you be completely positive and have no negatives? I don't think so. Because God had do's and don'ts. So we're going to have some of those too. But we need to have a better attitude about it. One of the first times I heard a woman do a class for a lot of women, she was Ed Harrell's sister. And she made a comment, and it changed my way of thinking forever. Well, not forever, but for most of the time. She said, you know, I used to think that I didn't like to wash dishes. I'm like, ding, ding, that's me. And then she said, well, you know, I got to thinking about it, and I thought, well, I sure like it better when the dishes are clean. Then I must like to wash dishes. I don't know if I still like the action of it, but I'm glad I can do it and have clean dishes. So some of these things are not quite as dense as they appear to be, learning to change the thinking. Establish and keep a regular schedule for several reasons. The restful sleep is very important for all kinds of health. It also says the circadian rhythm gets off if you don't keep a regular schedule for sleeping. Diet is important to have some regularity about. I know we have diets where you fast for a number of hours, maybe 12 hours. I can't do that. If I do that, I'll be unconscious because I'll have a low blood sugar. But some things don't work. Not everything works for everybody. But regular in some way. And we need to eat a healthy, nutritious diet. And as parents, you have some control over that for your children. Does that mean they should never have a donut or a piece of candy? No, it doesn't mean that. But it means in moderation. You know, one of the things that I've realized, and my mother told me this, she had a long period of illness, and she said, I always feel better if I get up and shower or bathe. And then I would also add to that, wear real clothes. Get out of your pajamas. Maybe at least sometime right after breakfast, if you're having a breakfast. But if we go around, like a lot of people have gotten in the habit of, even before this happened, I want to just wear my pajamas to the grocery store. That was never an inspired thought. If we get up, we shower, we put on clothes, then we're going to act more like what I like to call, I feel more like a human being. And so then you're going to act more like a human being. And then what you're going to attain to is trying to act like Christ. So I think we're better with that. You will feel better. Be deliberate. Plan for specific ways to create a positive reason for getting up for the day. I didn't used to like coffee. Then I had a reason that I was coming in contact with it quite often in the mornings. And so I thought, well, you know, I do kind of like drinking coffee in the mornings. So I got a coffee maker that you can preset. So when I wake up, one of the first things I think of, silly or not, is I got coffee waiting for me. It's already done. So as small of an incentive that might be, it's still an incentive. Take responsibility for your own happiness. It, I hate to break this to you, but it really isn't somebody else's job to make you happy. And if you think it is, you won't ever be happy. So if you take it under advisement that you do have some control and can have some control over your emotions, over your happiness or your sadness or your anger or your anxiety, it doesn't mean that you are a total failure if you get anxious sometime or if you have some problems with it. One of the things I wanted to say is there's the mind and there is the brain. The brain is an organ of the body, just like the pancreas, just like the heart. And would you say to somebody you cared about, you're a Christian, don't worry about the fact that you just got some awful disease or illness. No, just pray about it. No, that doesn't work that way. And if your brain has changed in its chemical makeup, or you have had an accident or injury that injured your brain, that's going to need some extra help. The good thing about that is we live in a much better time to get help for health problems, whether it's physical or mental. You know that the word that a child could not be diagnosed with depression until about the 1980s. There was no diagnostic manual that included children who were depressed. Isn't that sad? Because I knew some depressed children. And I knew when it wasn't treated, it got worse. Or they took up habits that were bad for them, or lots of other things can happen. But I'm just telling you that to make you more appreciative of living in a time where we've got a lot more help. We've got medications. There's one that I take that if I didn't, I wouldn't be alive. And I kind of thought maybe I had a little more work to do. So I take that. And I've had people say, that would be the worst thing in the world. No, it's not the worst thing in the world. There are a lot of worse things. So recognize how fortunate we are and that the brain is an organ of the body. The mind is how we think. And that's what Jesus expects us to work on changing as best we can. The next page has some other things that I hope you will read. It's got some I think I mentioned David Burns. Yes, David Burns he's the one I kind of followed. The new mood therapy is not that new anymore. It still works. He's got two books out on that. One is the original book, which tells you what you need to know and do. The other one is called a handbook, which has the same title, but it's got pages where you can fill in your answers and work through it that way. I'm not sure if that one's still in print, but probably somebody has it. Try Amazon if all else fails. Okay, Marianne, I think I'm done. Need to be done. So, can kind of open things up for people.